We continue our journey through the book of Romans. And like anything that comes in parts, it's probably a good idea to hear part one before you hear part two. So if you haven't, if you weren't here last week, you'll need to go back and just read the very start of Romans. I'm going to just read you a couple of verses where we ended up last week. We ended up in verse 16, where Paul, getting going with what he has to say to the church in Rome, says this: "I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. First the Jew, then to the Gentile. For in the gospel, a righteousness of God is revealed. The righteousness, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith." And then he comes to the second half of chapter one. He's just getting going. And he's got an argument that he wants to make here, and he's going to make it over the next couple of chapters. It's going to end up for us in wonderfully in chapter three. And I was being pushed before the service for a title for the sermon, and I was saying, do you know what? It's been very difficult to think of a title today that wasn't immediately depressing. You're going to be heartened by that, aren't you? Like, what have we come to? So the title that I've given to Graham for this morning is just hang in there, part one. Okay, so remember that as we proceed here this morning. Hang in there, part one, because in verse 18 we turn from what is unbelievably, amazingly good news in verses 16 and 17. To some more difficult news. You know, it feels a bit like, you know, when you go and you have some sort of difficult diagnosis with the doctor, and they say, "Here's the bad news," maybe they'll say, "The good news is we can get after it, but the bad news is it's going to be a hard road." Or perhaps in another circumstance in your life, you've had that combination of good news and bad news, and somebody's offered you, "What do you want to hear first, the good news or the bad news?" "Well, give me the good news first, because it might help to sustain me through the bad news." That is what the Apostle Paul has done here. He's made sure you hear the good news. Hang into the good news. Hold on to that, because we'll come back to it. But now we need to explore some of the more difficult parts. So let's read together from verse 18. "The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal human beings and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Furthermore, just as they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, so God gave them over to a depraved mind, so that they do what ought not to be done. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these very things, but also approve of those who practice them. Wow. I did give you the warning, didn't I? Just hang in there, part one. And we need to hang in because this has got something important to say to us. We're used, I think, and in this last week, as we've watched wildfires eat through big chunks of Los Angeles, we're used to the increasingly grim warnings that are coming our way about the environment. Apparently last year was the warmest year on record. Already, our climate is more extreme and less predictable. Rains, when they come, bring with them floods, and dry periods bring with them fires and terrible droughts. And as we project it forward, we know that even us in Britain are going to have an increasing impact of that on our lives. Now, perhaps when we hear these kind of things and think about it, it's tempting to think that it actually is someone else's problem. There are other people who pollute more, who have got more to deal with, who've got more issues. What can I do? It's what other people do. It's how they respond. But, you know, I think we're only ever really going to understand the good news that's bound up in renewables and in taking our economy in a carbon-free direction. We're only going to understand that if we can see how we fit into that pattern, if we can see how our contribution matters. Now, why am I saying this? Because I think in Romans, the Apostle Paul gives us some grim warnings about life on earth, about its general direction in relation to God and in relation to one another. And it's definitely, if you were listening, you know that that definitely isn't good news. What we were just listening to isn't very helpfully good news. But knowing how the human mind tends to work, the Apostle Paul, you see, inspired by God's Holy Spirit, is incredibly clever person. He's got something that he wants to say, and he wants us to get hold of it. And so he knows the way that the mind works. And so he allows us to begin to consider the problem in relation to them, to people who are not us, right? So we can look and say, oh, you know, the problem is the way they do it, the way it is out there. Now we know that there's lots of good things in the world. There's lots of things that we can see and enjoy and love and take hold of. There's lots of things that we're encouraged by. There are people that do countless acts of kindness and goodness. But when we look at the world in general, when we look at that big picture, well, we're a little bit despairing, aren't we? Because we kind of see the impact of war, we see the impact of poverty, we see the impact of authoritarian governance, we see the impact of unkindness at an individual level where people are just not considerate. And when we look out there, we kind of have got to kind of maybe see these things that are going on more generally before we're willing to consider our own role and responsibility for the problems that we face. Because it's easier and just more natural for us to blame others. And that's kind of where Paul's starting here. He's saying, yeah, you know, I've got some great news. I've got some really good news that you need to get hold of. But look around in the world. It's not great, is it? Even in Rome, in that city of Rome, there were some people who had it really, really good, but they were very, very few. And most of the people were really struggling. Rome was a city where the few at the top were kept at the top by thousands upon thousands, maybe even stretching into millions, of slaves who worked to keep them at the top for almost nothing. So Paul wants us to get a hold of the bad news in order to understand the good news. And in order to do that, he turns to our world around us. Something else is being revealed. The good news is revealed in the gospel, the good news of Jesus in verse 17 and 16 is where he lands there. But something else is being revealed when we look around at the world. When we look around at the world, we see God's wrath revealed against godlessness and wickedness. The godlessness and wickedness of, it says, people, them, those folk. You know, the first point I think we need to know is that God's wrath is not to be confused. And I've said this before, but it bears saying it again and again. God's wrath is not to be confused with human anger. When I get angry, I'm generally not very much in control. I'm not a pretty sight. I don't know that I'm as angry as I am, and it isn't a good thing. You know, I need to be shut away and put somewhere until I just calm down. And that's the same for, I think, most of us. Human anger is volatile, it's capricious, it's unpredictable, and it's most often associated with our selfish concerns. It's selfishly motivated. You know, occasionally, just occasionally, maybe we'll get angry at something that actually points towards what God's wrath is. Because when we get angry with something like abuse, when we get angry with something like slavery or poverty, well, we've got a little bit of a clue as what the righteousness of God is all about. Because when we're angry at those things, there's a sort of righteous indignation within us, a kind of sense of opposition to those things that is fixed. And you see, that's what we're talking about. When we talk about the wrath of God, we're not talking about God being emotionally unstable. We're talking about God's determined and relentless opposition to everything that gets in the way of his creation and his intention for his creation. Anything that disfigures, anything that corrupts that creation of God's, is something that God is determined, absolutely determined to do away with. And when we talk about, and when the Apostle Paul talks about God's wrath, that is what he means. Not God losing it and lashing out, but God determined to resolve and actually deal with the problems that his creation faces. Well, there are two then revelations here in the book of Romans. The first is the revelation of the gospel of the righteousness of God, which we see in Jesus. And then the second revelation, and all that first revelation points to the world as it could be and as it will be. And then the second revelation is this revelation of the wrath of God, because it points to the world, says Paul, as it is. Now, I think we're inclined to think of the wrath of God as something that is revealed in fire and brimstone. We think of the wrath of God as something like those scenes that we see on our TV news channels at the moment of the streets of Gaza, the kind of bombed out remains. We think that's the wrath of God is utter destruction. But no, that's not what Paul tells us here. He actually says, no, actually, it's not something that is going to come in this enormous moment of destruction. It's actually something that is already present in the world. It has been said that the history of the world is the judgment of God. And I think there's truth in that. The history of the world is the judgment of God. Because the Apostle Paul points us to how the world around us actually, even today, reveals the wrath of God, reveals God's determined and fixed kind of intention to deal with everything that gets in the way of his creation. So let's just have a look and see. Let me just try and explain this. And this is the bit that you need to just keep hanging in there, because we are going to end in a good place. God's determined and relentless opposition to everything that gets in the way of his creation is revealed, first of all, in verse 18 it says, it's revealed in people's suppression of the truth. It's revealed in the fact that people suppress the truth about God. Because, you know, God actually isn't hidden. We can't see God, but God isn't hidden. He's revealed, it says here, in what he has made. Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. When we look around us at all that God has made, we should be able to discern God's creative hand. It shouldn't just be an afterthought, you know, when we come to faith and afterwards when we look back at things, we go, yeah, now I see it. But actually, everything contains within it such a signature of the Master himself that actually we could, if we were paying attention, notice that this masterpiece that is our world has been made by God himself. So there's the created order. I think also, one of the other things that perhaps the Apostle Paul is referring to here is the sense we have of beauty. I think that moment when we can look at a sunset or a scene or a moment in the woods or a moment in your back garden or a moment with a child or a moment in some beautiful space by the sea and we go, wow. That tells us something. That's not something that is that we need in order for our survival. That's an extra. We didn't need that to make it through all of life to get to this point. It's not part of the evolutionary baggage that is accumulated. No, that is because we're made in the image of God, and when we see beauty, we appreciate it. We understand it. There's something in us that sees a something and makes it out to be what it was intended and declares it as such. And then the third thing I think that Paul maybe points to here is that actually in our core, we are spiritual beings. All of us, the atheists and the most religious among us. All of us are spiritual. It's just that we fill that spiritual space in our lives with different things. We all have a spiritual center that needs to be filled, that needs to motivate us and demonstrate to us the otherness of who we are, the fact that life has meaning and purpose and intention. But even when God is glimpsed, says the Apostle Paul here, even when God is glimpsed, God is not honored. God is not worshipped as God, but actually seen as a power to be manipulated, a power to be controlled. And this is why the Apostle Paul recognizes that though people claim to be wise in verse 22, they become fools and exchange the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal human being and birds and animals and reptiles. People would rather have a God that they can control. They would have a God that they can do things with when they feel like doing them with. This so-called wisdom leads to the foolishness of idolatry. So God's wrath, this opposition, this unrelenting opposition to all that gets in the way, is revealed in the suppression of the truth that comes in to all of humanity. But God's opposition is also revealed in what God allows. So it's not the fire and brimstone, it's not terrible things coming down, but it's actually just God saying, okay then, do it your way. And this is what this passage means when it speaks here. Three times it says, God gave them over. God gave them over. Verse 24 and verse 26 and then in verse 28. God gave them over. God's saying, okay, have it your way. It's not going to end well, but do it the way you want to do it. God stands back, even though he knows the consequences will be not great, because he's determined to take these things that get in the way of his creation out of the way. And this is one of the ways that it happens. So God, it says, first of all, in verse 24, God gives them over to sinful, he gives people over to sinful desires. So this is the kind of the will, that sort of intention of people, that determination that says you what you want to do. God gives them, people out there in the world, over to sinful desires. What we want for ourselves is the governing principle. And this is most clearly seen, says the Apostle Paul, in kind of just sexual impurity that goes on around about us, which he says actually is just another form of idolatry. Because look at verse 25, they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator. Here's the problem. Things that are good and are meant to be good when they're contained in the right kind of spaces, they become things that drag us away from God. They don't end well when they get out of control. God gives people over to sinful desires. The next thing that God gives people over to, it says in verse 26, because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. And here, I think, whereas the first one, most sinful desire, is a matter of the will, here it's a matter of the heart. People are moving away from God's creative intentions. There's an experimental nature to people. Anything goes because how it makes me feel is the operating principle. God gives humanity over to these shameful lusts. And then he goes on and says in verse 28, furthermore, just as they didn't think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, so God gave them over to a depraved mind. And each one is a kind of a step down. So we've got a step down to sinful desires. We've got a step down to shameful lusts. These are emotions out of control. And here now we are at the point of a depraved mind. They can no longer think straight. Thoughts are twisted and tangled and disordered. And just look where that leads. It's not great. He talks about it leading to envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. Until we get to the utter dystopia of no understanding. Verse 31, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Thank God we do not live in that space all the time. But we see it, don't we? We see it on the battlefield of Ukraine. We see it in the streets of Gaza. We see it worked out in different places around our world. Places that have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, and no mercy. So God's opposition, his relentless opposition to what gets in the way, is revealed in what he allows. And then God's relentless opposition, this wrath that he has, is revealed also in what people blatantly ignore. Even though the judgment of death hangs over all of humanity, we know there are just two things that are certain in life, don't we? We have to pay taxes, and we will all face an end. And we know that. But most people can look at the very wicked. Most people can look at people like Hitler and Stalin and Pol Pot, and they say, thank God they died. Thank God they met the end, either at their own hands or at the hands of others, because they weren't fit to live, because of the evil that they did. But we find it difficult to draw a line on those dots to ourselves and realize that the reason we die is because of what we've done, because of the way we are and the world around us is. That actually, because of sin, because of the relentless opposition that God has to it continuing to oppose, to infect his creation. And that's what Paul is speaking about here. Although they know, verse 32, God's righteous decree that those who continue in such things deserve death, they not only continue to do those very things, but approve of those who practice them. What a dark picture of life on earth. I did warn you, you need to hang in here this morning. It's unremittingly grim. It can be even depressing, but I don't want to end there. Because if we look at the world, what do we see? We see, as I said, the judgment of God revealed in the history of the world. We see that played out even before our eyes. We see some really dark stuff going on there. Because we see what God wanting us to confront, what the awfulness of life looks like without God in it. If we dismiss the author of life from life itself, life has no possibility of continuing in any way like it is supposed to. No. We can't end there. We need to look back to verses 16 and 17 because this is what the Apostle Paul wants us to do. Hold on, above all things, to verses 16 and 17. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, the good news, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew, then to the Gentile. For in the gospel, the good news, the righteousness of God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last. Paul's saying, you look around at the world, at the community of our world as it is, and actually, there's a lot to depress us. But then, look and see that one man. Look and see that being Jesus. It's almost like the first ray of sun on a very, very dark night when there's been no moon. And you actually get that first ray of sun that pierces into the darkness. And that's kind of how Jesus appears. He's one man against a whole world. But his light will shine and overcome all the darkness. This is the message of Romans. The righteousness of God is brought to us in the person of Jesus. There is a way out. There is a way to put us and our world and everything in it to rights. We We'll see the part that we get to play in it as we continue to work our way through the book of Romans. But hold on to that good news. Hang in there. Thanks, Andrew.